Thank you. I'm here from Baltimore, Maryland, and happy to be here because I heard tonight it's going to be 36 degrees, so you're in a good spot. That's right. Our presentation tonight is on an innovative teaching strategy. Nikki and I are both clinical assistant professors at a school of nursing, and we realized by looking at the literature that there's very little preparedness content in disaster training. So what we'll be going through today is what we did at our school, and hopefully you'll be able to do it at your school. So I'm Margaret McCormick. Nikki Austin is a major in the 10th Medical Regiment of the Medical Reserve Corps. She was a contributor to this paper. Dr. Marcy Weinstein, the Associate Dean of the College of Health Professions at Towson, isn't here today, but sends her wishes for a pleasant conference. And Colonel Wayne Nelson was also a contributor, and he's part of the Maryland Medical Defense Force, and they were very instrumental in having this innovative teaching strategy work. What we wanted to do was look at the scope of the problem. We know that the number of natural and man-made disasters are increasing worldwide. They seem to be increasing in number and in severity. We know just this year alone in California, you've had all these wildfires and earthquakes. In the Midwest, you've had a series of tornadoes. And along the Gulf Coast and the East Coast, you've had 5 tornadoes make landfall this year. So really, as far as natural disasters, we've had our share of them this year. And I think after celebrating the 7th anniversary of 9/11, we still are reeling from the effects of the terrorist attack. So I think you'd all agree with me that we do need to prepare our new nurses that are coming out of nursing schools about disaster training and mass casualty care. There was a study done in 2003 by the International Nursing Coalition for Mass Casualty Education. They surveyed over 2,000 schools. They only got a response from about 350 schools, but found that 50% of the schools had disaster preparedness content. That means 50% did not have them. And they said of that 50%, there were only 4 hours of content devoted to disaster training. To me, that doesn't make any sense, not in the world that we're living. Okay. Sorry with the slides. So we need to teach our students about the 4 activities of emergency management. First, there's mitigation. We would like to prevent these disasters from happening. We should have evacuation routes, warning systems. People should know where to go and what to do in case of a hurricane or a flood or a tornado. If we can't prevent it, then of course we should be prepared. We should have all of our agencies map out a plan. We should know, we should be drilling and planning and knowing what our communication system is, and definitely be collaborating with other agencies. If we need to respond, then we need to deal with the immediate effects of an emergency. And the American Nurses Association highly supports nurses being involved in disaster relief. However, they say what we should do is be part of an organized group, either the American Red Cross, the National Disaster Management Team, the Maryland Medical Reserve, or any medical reserve corps that's in your local area. Because what we saw with Katrina was that large groups of unorganized healthcare workers, even though they meant well, sometimes turned out to be part of the problem because they needed to be housed and fed, and sometimes they became victims themselves. We also have to deal with the issues of recovery. It's not just dealing with the emergency, but the aftermath of the disaster. You know that down in Galveston County, they're still putting tarps over their property trying to reconcile some things from the hurricane. So you know that there is an emotional fallout. There's that can be contaminated food and water, medication loss, lots of sequelae to these disasters. Now, what is the role of the public health nurse during these disasters? Actually, public health nursing are involved in all phases of disaster. They're excellent at mitigation and preparedness. They do disease tracking. They know when there are outbreaks of contaminants. They are great at working at temporary stations, handing out vaccines, mass prophylaxis. If there is a disaster, they're right in there doing shelter operations. I know down at Katrina, there were many Red Cross nurses that rolled up their sleeves and stayed down there for the duration. And then we always need to make sure that we're involved in the recovery phase, that people need to get back to a normal life, and sometimes it takes years. You know that with Katrina, with Gustav and Ike, that it's going to take years for everyone to get back to normal. Okay. Before we go any further, I'd like to go over some definitions of terms that we're going to be using. The first is mass casualty incident or event, and that's an event that overwhelms the system. So it's more injuries than a system can handle. The word simulation means training that mimics reality. Now, we've been doing this in nursing schools with Mama Chase since 1950, so it's really nothing new, but now we're trying to take it on a bigger scale. The word medical surge capacity is really the cornerstone of preparedness. Medical surge capacity has two components. It has medical capacity and surge capacity. Medical capacity means we need to increase the number of responders, and surge capacity means we need to increase the skill of those responders. And then I'd like to discuss the Medical Reserve Corps, because they were so instrumental and so they made our drills so successful. They are local volunteers, doctors, nurses, veterinarians, dentists, morticians, epidemiologists, lots of people in public health. And they work at their regular jobs during the year, but they are willing to go to a disaster when it happens. So they really are our reach back, almost our second responders, people that are going to be there when our regular regional resources are overwhelmed. So they're a great group to have. I'd like to get to disaster education, because being an academic, we know that nursing schools, medical schools, lots of health institutions should really, not only could, but really should be making an impact and a contribution into bolstering our nation's health infrastructure. Of course, we're the ones who are getting the new students ready to go out into the world, and we would be doing them a disservice if we didn't do any disaster training. So what we did at our college was something called an FTX, a disaster training field exercise. And what we did was we involved public, private, civil, and military units to come together in one place to run a drill. Now, this is something new for academic institutions. Normally, we have our own little drill, but bringing in agencies from the state and from the county was a kind of a new thing. So it was interagency. It was interdisciplinary. We didn't just use the nursing students. We used all the college students on campus that had different majors and different interests. It was large scale. And we really were trying to test our medical surge capacity. We wanted to know what would happen if the hospitals were overwhelmed. Because really, we are an overflow for the hospitals in our area. Just to give you an idea, Towson is right next door to about four different hospitals. We're close to University of Maryland and Hopkins, but we're also next to some local hospitals, St. Joe's, GBMC, Shepherd Pratt. So really, if there was a disaster and they were overwhelmed, they could send the patients to our college, because we, you know, as colleges, we have lots of bathrooms, we have lots of food, and we have big gymnasiums. So it was actually the right place to do it. We co-sponsored it with the MRC, and we held it in the Building of Opportunity, which is our campus hall. The building that nursing is housed in has three gymnasiums, two nursing skills lab, and lots of classrooms. So what we did that day was we suspended classes so that we wouldn't be banging into each other. And we had our nursing students use that as a clinical day. Okay, so they weren't in the hospital. This was a mandatory day for them to be on campus. The objectives that we had were to teach our students how to function under a unified incident command structure. Now, that's something new for nurses, too. We also wanted them to learn how to assess victims, large numbers of victims, in a short period of time with limited resources. One of the students said to me after the drill, I'm used to assessing a patient, but it takes me a good 45 minutes. Well, they didn't have that much time. They needed to get through a large number of patients in a very short period of time with very few supplies. We also wanted them to learn how to collaborate with other agencies and to know the principles of disaster response and management. We did have an online component for those younger students who had never been involved in any type of disaster preparedness, and that was a first aid course where they could actually take a test and be certified in first aid. Now, most of our students had gotten their little first aid card with their CPR, so they didn't need to do it. But for those students who didn't have it, it was an introduction to basic first aid. We did a research study. We did get IRB approval from the university, and we used a combination qualitative and quantitative data collection so that we could review our information at the end and see what we could glean from it. We had confidence scales. We had face-to-face discussions. At the end of our drill, we had hundreds of people in a gym, and Nikki can attest to this. It was very difficult to keep track of because we had so many people there. But we did a hot wash session or a debriefing session, which means we talked about everything that happened during the drill, what was good and what was bad. And at the end, I'll share with you some of the gaps and limitations that we found. And sometimes I think we found more gaps than we found good things, but I think we're going to be doing the drill again this year, so we'll be able to correct some of those things. What I want to do is give you an idea of how we plan the drill. When we first set out to do this, we had a directive from the university handed down to us that we were to put this together in a short period of time. So there was about 7 core members, and we met every couple of weeks, and we had a planning cycle of about 4 months, which really wasn't very much to pull something like this off. We also had no budget to speak of. So if we could do it, you could do it, okay? We needed stuff. And so what we decided, since we had very little money or no money at all, that we would stick with the essentials. So we knew we needed water because it was going to be a spring day and it was going to be warm, and we didn't want any of our providers to become victims. We already had enough victims. We had the nursing students wear their uniform, bring their stethoscopes, have their pen light and scissors, and bring as many supplies as they had so that we wouldn't have to have them for them. But we did have basics. We had gloves and hand wash and some gauze and tape. The other thing we needed was staff. So we had our nursing faculty. They came in their uniforms as well. We had the military people. They were in their uniforms. We had military docs and staff people. People from human resources that were out in the parking lot directing traffic. We had security guards giving security briefings in the beginning of the drill. So everybody was hands on deck. Space. As I told you before, we had 3 gyms, very large gyms, and the first gym was their first point of contact. So when they came in, we actually had online registration to see how many people were actually going to come. But then if they did come and not sign up, we didn't turn them away. So we had a registration table where they came in, and we also had them sign a waiver form, a liability waiver, so that they wouldn't sue us in case anything happened during the drill, if they fell or got hurt. And they just signed their name, and the university was happy, and the university lawyer was happy. As you can see, this was our student in their uniform, and then those were the basic supplies that we had on the table. We had disposable masks, gloves, some trash bags. We had hand wash, some gauze, and some slings, but not a lot of stuff. We had paper and pencils so that they could write. What we wanted them to learn was how to function under an incident command structure. What was an incident command structure? It's actually a flexible management organization. It provides a common language so that agencies, when they come together, that they can work together and understand each other. and there's usually an incident commander. The incident commander is the most senior person, and in our case, it was a medical physician. There are other times when the incident commander can be the battalion chief from the fire department, whoever is the expert person in the area of disaster. If it's a radiation attack, then you would get somebody who was proficient in that area. We also had a deputy commander who was there to take over in case our incident commander became incapacitated. Then there are four groups that are typically under the incident commander, and that is your operations, planning, logistics, and finance. And as you can imagine, the incident commander sets the goals. The operations coordinator is going to carry out the directives. Planning is going to make sure that whatever's happening during the drill gets communicated back to the incident commander. Logistics team is going to deal with the equipment and supplies and things like that. And they were there at 6 o'clock in the morning, putting all the cots out, getting the chairs ready. So they really, they earn their keep. And then there's finance and administration, and those are the people that can attract the costs and deal with the reimbursements, particularly after the drill. So this is a picture of Major Austin there with her students. And to get an idea of how triage worked, what we did was, it is a system of sorting patients according to their injuries, and we would color code them. So I'm sure anybody who's been involved in disaster planning knows that green is minor, and those are what you want to do is assess to make sure that patients can walk away from the scene. So their status is unlikely to deteriorate. They may even be able to assist in their own care, and they are what we consider the walking wounded. And there I am in the delayed. The delayed yellow triage tag meant that the transport of the victim could be delayed. The victim had serious but potentially life-threatening injuries, but they weren't expected to deteriorate anytime soon, so they could wait. So they were moved to the yellow zone, or the delayed triage. And then in our other nursing lab, we had the immediate red triage zone. And those were victims that needed immediate intervention. They needed to be transported quickly, probably within a 60-minute period, in order to survive. And they had airway, breathing, and circulation issues. And then, of course, we had the expectant area. This area gave us a little bit of trouble because students really didn't know how to deal with the almost dead. It's okay if they were really dead, but what do you do with the almost dead? Mass casualty care works on the principle of maximum benefit to the people that you can provide to. So if you have limited resources and you have patients that are not going to survive, then you need to move them into that area. And we did have some ethical concerns about, you know, withholding treatment from certain people. And I think that's something you need to go over with your students before the drill, not during the drill. So what we did was we put some mannequins in body bags, and we actually had morticians in the room with the students and the body bags. And believe it or not, you need morticians and you need dentists to do victim ID. So that was a very important part of our drill. Those patients that were unlikely to survive due to the severity of their injuries and to the limited resources that we had were made comfortable. If they had pain, they were treated accordingly. This is just a flow chart or a flow diagram of how we triaged our patients. If the patient was considered a walking wounded, they were sent to the green zone or minimal care. If they had spontaneous respirations that were less than 30 a minute, their radial pulses were present, their capillary refill was less than 2 seconds, and they were able to follow simple commands, they were sent to the yellow zone or delayed. However, if any of their vital signs changed, if their mentation changed, or if they were bleeding heavily, or they needed their airway repositioned, then they were transferred to the red zone, where they were given care right away. And what we did was we placed two 16-gauge catheters, large bore angiocaths in them. We put dressings around their wound to stop the bleeding. We repositioned their airway. And then once they were taken care of or wrapped up a little bit, we would try to move them to a different zone, hopefully to the yellow zone. However, if they were not going to make it, if their airway was completely compromised, then we would move them to the black or the expected zone. And this is how we showed our students how the drill should work. Now, when we collected our data at the end, we had 500 students complete the drill from two campuses. We had over 200 volunteers, because that didn't include any of our staff. We had the Maryland Medical Defense Force, Baltimore County Health Department. We had logistics supports to help us with supplies and equipment. We had people from human resources from the college who helped get the gyms ready. We had security personnel stationed out in the parking lots to make sure that the ambulances were in place, that if anything happened, we would be able to take care of them. Now, one thing I failed to mention was that we had a red card system. Should a student or a faculty member have a real emergency, we would hold up this red card, and that would mean to suspend the drill. Okay, so that means we weren't kidding, that a student was having a problem, maybe a diabetic attack or an anxiety attack or something, but playtime was over. We really needed to get this person taken care of. So we had that red card system. The other thing we did was we had the Critical Incident Stress Foundation people there, because they could deal with the anxiety issues or the mental health issues that might occur during a mass casualty exercise. We did have some students that got very upset because of family reconciliation issues. They couldn't find where their so-called members of their family were. They felt that it was too real for them. They didn't like all the panic that was happening. So it really was very helpful to have those mental health people available during the drill. And we told the students that there was counseling available for any sequelae that they had after the drill. And we wouldn't hold it against them. We wouldn't give them a bad grade. But that there were people there ready to take care of them. And then, of course, we had Towson faculty and staff. We had our own nursing faculty, but we also had faculty from other departments that were there to help with our students. And as I said, we not only had nursing faculty, but we had students from the university, from all departments. And even though it counted as a clinical day for our students, it counted as extra credit for the students that were in the other departments. So everyone benefited. So I'd like to go over some of the outcomes that we got from the nursing students. We did collect a lot of data from other students, from the MRC, from DMORT, from Incident Command. But today, because it's a nursing program, I just want to go over our nursing data. We found that 91% of our students had no previous experience. And these were even our second semester seniors who were getting ready to graduate. We found that 74% of our students felt that they were confident enough to know that they could learn something new. 82% said that they gained a new understanding of what disaster preparedness and response was all about. And 66% said that it was very valuable to them. And of course, we had those juniors who took the first aid online quiz, and that was about a quarter of our juniors who had taken it. And probably the reason the number is so low because a lot of our students had CPR cards that also had first aid as part of it. So in conclusion, I'd like to tell you that disaster field training exercises can help present and future healthcare workers not only understand their role, but understand the gaps and weaknesses of the response system. And I told you I would tell you what our gaps were. We found that doctors and nurses need breaks. They needed water and bathroom breaks, and that's one thing we didn't even think of. We really need at least two shifts of workers. Really, we had one OB nurse who was just totally overwhelmed with this emergency room situation that we had created. And no one really, we didn't have any person who was going around to make sure that our staff was okay. And I think that happens in real life disasters. The other thing we found was that we didn't have good communication between zones. We didn't know if there were bed availables in the red zone or whether there were beds in the yellow zone. So if we had to transfer a patient, we were starting to get backed up. Okay. The other thing we found was that our students didn't know how to fill out triage tags. They didn't know how to fill out treatment logs. They weren't very good at documenting what happened, what type of disaster it was, what type of injuries the patient had. Because you know, after Katrina, there were those issues where they want to know whether you did the right thing. You know, were you acting in haste or did you use good judgment? So I think it is important to know how to fill out those tags correctly so that if patient is transferred from one zone to the other, the next nurse knows what was done and what still needs to be done. The issue is not if a disaster is going to happen, it's when it's going to happen. So I think all agencies, whether you're a nursing school or whether you're a public health agency, we all need to have training drills, because these training drills can not only increase the number, it can also increase our organizational's ability to respond to a disaster and the skill of our providers. Thank you.
5 minutes for questions.
Good. I'd like to open the floor to questions. And Major Austin is here from the Medical Reserve Corps, which is one of the organizations that has that can offer a lot of things to healthcare workers in terms of liability insurance, workman's comp, job security. So I'd like her to answer questions if that's okay.
I don't know if I need more. Please go to the microphone.
I know I don't need a mic to ask the question. What type of disaster did you simulate?
A tornado. We had, and it was right before, and right after this, we actually had tornadoes in southern Maryland that came through, so it was timely. The tornado went from the beltway that runs around Baltimore and through Baltimore County all the way down to the city line, cut out a quarter of a mile swath. So the situation was it destroyed or incapacitated large numbers of buildings early in the morning while students were asleep and still on campus. So we would have a student population on campus that really needed our help. We did. Actually, we did that a couple of different ways. I was teaching the medical surgical nursing component at that time, so it was a class project for them. They all had to write case studies. I said, okay, your patient, you need to make a case scenario relative to a tornado about who your patient is in your medical surgical. Whoever they chose for their case study. So if it was a surgical patient, I said, okay, well, then your patient is at home. Maybe it's the day that they need to come to the hospital for their surgery. They didn't quite make it because a tornado came through, and now they're in the gym. So they had to then think about what injuries they might have for a tornado on top of all the comorbidities or issues that patient would have, which is really real life. So those students, the whole second semester junior class wrote their scripts, and we also made other scripts. We copied them over and over, and we put them in envelopes. And on the outside of the envelope, we had basically four questions that they were supposed to be able to play, so they wouldn't know who they were. And so, like, can you walk, can you talk, can you follow commands, those kinds of things. Because that's all they care about at initial triage, is can you do those things? If you can walk, talk, hear my voice, follow commands, you're yellow. If you can't, then you go to red. It's a pretty quick process. And then they can open the envelope, and they have more information for wherever they go next. And so we had graduate students in the College of Health Professions, some of those administrative people, assembled all that. I actually got all of those scenarios that we got and made up a few maybe myself. And we had the faculty, some faculty members, based on their expertise, wrote scenarios and emailed them to me. I kind of fine-tuned them and sent them off to the College of Health Professions in like four big, you know, emails. And they essentially put them together. And I think we still have them, or we still have the files, so we can use them over and over again. Yes?
I just wanted to clarify, when you were talking about the incident command system, I assume that when you're looking at the different the operations and the logistics, that you are using people from the university who are already playing many of those roles in their everyday lives. So it seemed like you put human resources into planning and finance, and you were nursing students all fell into the operations category.
Right.
Is that correct?
Well, actually, a lot of the incident command structure, when we actually declared the emergency, and the Medical Reserve Corps came, the Maryland Defense Force came as the people who would then staff this surge treatment site. The overall incident commander had jurisdiction over all of the Maryland Defense people and the morticians that came. We had a medical commander and a deputy medical commander. So we had an overall incident commander over all the logistics, planning, finance, and all those people. Not a university person, but a military person, and the military people were very involved in the planning. So he came to the planning sessions. Our planner was also a medical regiment nurse. And so in a sense, it became a military model. And in a real situation, the military would have just taken over the entire building, and it would have become a military exercise. And if you remember some of the slides where and on Margaret's, they had armbands that said MDDF. We would basically swear them into the Medical Reserve Corps to give them the state liability protection, so that they would actually follow under that military incident command structure.
But I'm just clarifying that you did put your nursing students primarily into operations. You didn't,
yes.
You weren't sending them into finance or
No. Our seniors who are ready to graduate were the care providers, and all of the other three semesters of we have juniors and seniors, the rest of them were smart victims. They got bored afterwards because we recycled them and made them go two or three times through. That's how we got 500, or we saw so many patients. Yes, ma'am.
I'd like to know if you prepared the students
this is the last
in any
question.
Way, like ahead of time, because if they're used to assessing for 45 minutes and they have to do it in a hurry,
we did some. That was one of our fallbacks. Like the juniors, I had them in class, so they got a prep of disaster management, who all the military people were. We also had to prep the faculty because the faculty hasn't done this before. They hadn't heard of our unit. And so prepping the faculty was big. We did this